All right. Good morning, everyone. It is now time for our next session, which is an update on state and federal policy issues and audiology specifically, but healthcare more generally. Folks, we'll start to filter back in from our break. So I'm going to take just a moment to read an introduction for our two speakers. First, we're joined by Stephanie Chayefsky. Stephanie serves as the Executive Director of the Academy of Doctors of Audiology, one of our sponsors. Thank you, Stephanie. She carries 20 years of management experience in both the public and private sector, with an emphasis in nonprofit marketing, fundraising, and public relations. She also has her Master's of Public Health degree and is a certified association executive. We're joined as well by Representative Deanna Frazier. She's a Kentucky State Representative raised in Madison County, who went on to start a business centered around hearing healthcare. As a healthcare professional, Frazier has focused her time in Frankfort on combating the drug epidemic, fighting for criminal justice reform, and working with law enforcement by providing the tools and resources necessary to keep our community safe. I want to thank both of our panelists for joining us today. And just going to go ahead and kick right off. We're going to do this kind of as a panel format with some questions, so feel free if you hear a topic you want to hear a little bit more about, raise your hand. We can definitely take questions from the audience as we go. No need to save them for the end. But I want to start this with Representative Frazier and just kind of a general background on how the legislature works in Kentucky. So many people don't know, but our General Assembly, our legislature, is what people would call a part-time legislature. Though I can tell you from Representative Frazier's experience, it's certainly not a part-time job. But they only meet a few months every year instead of year-round, for example, like Congress does. Given that dynamic and the citizen legislature, can you talk about how that affects policymaking at the state level?
Yes, thank you, Adam. And first off, I want to take the opportunity to say hello to everyone. It's so good to be here with friends and colleagues and people that I've known for 20, 30 years, and so it's really great to be here. So I wanted to say that first off. But as far as the legislative body being a part-time position, what a lot of constituents learn that we are only in session from January until roughly the middle of April. And so that is really the only time that we have legislative authority. And so the rest of the year, when issues come up and people are, you know, you need to do something about it, I'll get so many calls and emails, you know, you need to do this, you need to, you know, file this bill. We, even though we can do work and gain information and make progress towards something, we really have no authority to enact anything. And interestingly, when the reason that our sessions are the way that they are is because we were naturally an agrarian society, and so farmers needed something to do from January to April, and so that's why people would travel to Frankfort and they would stay there for those few months, and then people would go back home and raise their crops and do those types of things. So that tradition has kind of stayed on, and so that's why that we were only in session those first few months of the year. We did having trouble hearing me. We did pass a constitutional amendment that will be on the ballot for Kentucky for next year that will allow us to have some days where we can go in and do business other than those few short months in the spring. And so that's something that will be up to the voters to decide if that's something that they would like for us to do moving forward.
Well, and you mentioned a little bit about how the legislature was originally conceived. Because we had folks coming in from their farms and need to be back in time. But now we have a wide variety of professions represented in the legislature, from attorneys to insurance, farmers, still a good number, but healthcare professionals. As one of only two elected audiologists in the country that I'm personally aware of at the state level, how does that shape your interaction with folks who are maybe not as familiar with healthcare issues?
Naturally, like you said, because people have different backgrounds, when we see legislation or bills that affect those topic areas, you know, that's kind of our go-to person. You know, what do you think about this? What's your take on this? And so being an audiologist in our state, in the legislature, I can't tell you how significant that is, not only in healthcare in general, but, you know, and I'll talk a little bit more in the future, we've done a few things to change that. And a lot of the conversations take place in the hallway. You know, they're like, hey, I've got this bill coming through my committee, what's it do? And I'm like, you need to support it. And that's really all I have to say. So it's about having that influence and being able to be available and for people to be aware of what an audiologist is and what an audiologist does.
Appreciate that. And so, Stephanie, we're going to pivot a little bit. We said it was a state and federal update. I think we won't rehash too much how Congress works or doesn't from time to time, but I think Stephanie can talk a little bit about some of the federal issues that have come up regarding audiology specifically. You know, I think at most point I would hope that our attendees are familiar with the Medicare Audiologist Access and Services Act, but could you give us just a brief explainer for the folks that here aren't as familiar, and just kind of where we're at in the most recent Congress and where the bill is?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Can everyone hear me okay? It's okay? All right, great. I'm one of those people that wishes that our legislators at the federal level only worked part-time too. But while they're there, given that they are there full-time, we certainly wish that they would pass and advance the Medicare Audiologist Access and Services Act. So the policy challenges that it will address are the following. So first, you know, right now, if you have Medicare Part B beneficiaries, can't go directly to the audiologist and have those services covered unless they first obtain an order from a physician. So it's challenging for the beneficiary, it's challenging for your practices, and it's challenging for the physicians that are having to do the order as well. And I know a lot of folks in practice actually have expressed concern that physicians actually are frustrated by the fact a lot of times that they have to do those orders for the patient. So it delays care, it frustrates patients, and they don't know as they're going into Medicare that this is going to be an issue. So if they've been your patient before that, or if they're coming from a Medicare Advantage or some other commercial plan, certainly if they've been at the VA or literally in any other federal program or with any other payer, there's no such mandate for a physician order before a patient can go to the audiologist and have those services covered through that payer. So that's an issue. Secondly, audiologists are classified under Medicare as suppliers. And we really don't know the nature of the history about that decision. We have researched it exhaustively, and we don't know exactly why. But it's not an appropriate classification for audiologists to be deployed in the most efficient way in the Medicare system. So that's a challenge. And then the third challenge is really that audiology services are also not defined appropriately under the Medicare system. So they're defined under a classification called diagnostic other, which is the same place that lab services and imaging services are all classified. And it doesn't recognize the fact that audiologists are also able to provide treatment services that Medicare covers. It's just that they're not in the right classification to do that. So there is a piece of legislation in going through Congress that will fix all of those problems. It's something that ADA is working on with ASHA, with AAA, and it has support from the entire audiology community, as we're aware. So that's fantastic. And what it will do is alleviate those three things. So it will, by statute, remove the physician order requirement, so patients, beneficiaries would be able to come directly to the audiologist and have those services covered without that physician order. It would allow the audiologist to be reimbursed for all of the treatment services that they're licensed to provide that Medicare covers. And it will reclassify audiologists from suppliers to practitioners within the Medicare system. Among other things that would allow, that will put audiologists in the classification that would allow them to provide services via telehealth and do many other things that Medicare recognizes. So oftentimes when Medicare makes positive improvements, it will make them for the practitioner class and the physician class. And it will oftentimes leave other providers behind so that we're always trying to play catch up in any new regulation or statute improvement because they just simply don't, they forget to include everybody. So other providers that are in that practitioner class already include clinical social workers, psychologists, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, nurse midwives. So certainly audiologists are more than qualified to be in that class by virtue of their training and background and educational background. So it's definitely appropriate. It's also very long overdue. So that's the nature of what the legislation will do. Now, how are we getting it done? The bill was first introduced in 2019. It has very strong bipartisan support in both chambers. So here in Kentucky, one of our senators, Senator Rand Paul, is one of the sponsors, as is Elizabeth Warren. So they have been working together over the past 3 years now on this particular bill. And it was just reintroduced in this Congress. And Senator Chuck Grassley is also one of the original sponsors this time. And that's a phenomenal thing for us because both he and Senator Warren are serving on the Senate Finance Committee. So that's the committee of jurisdiction for this legislation. And we have some real opportunities to get it advanced in this Congress and maybe even this year. On the House side, we have about 35 co-sponsors at this point, almost equal in terms of Republicans and Democrats. From a state standpoint, I think Representative Comer is getting on, if he's not on, and Thomas Massey is one of the co-sponsors as well. So it's across the spectrum. No matter what your political philosophy is, there are people on this legislation that would match it, you know, in every sort of, it's just extremely bipartisan, and we think because it's such a great idea. So we're working on some things this year. You probably saw that recently there was a big infrastructure bill that passed, and then following that was a budget resolution that called for the Finance Committee to do some things, including build out a hearing, vision, and dental package under Medicare. And so we anticipate that that is going to include a provision for hearing aids, though it may be narrow, we don't know. And so we're working with Congress to make sure that no matter what they do on that side of the equation, that absolutely foundational to any hearing benefit would be the inclusion of the Medicare Audiologist Access and Services Act.
I think that was a great summary. And it's exciting for us as the Kentucky Academy of Audiology to have such great support from our members of Congress. You know, as Stephanie mentioned, one of the lead sponsors of the bill in the Senate. So I know that's a personal point of pride for us. Back over to the state level, Representative Frazier, we have seen some exciting changes actually at the state level for the practice of audiology just on the past couple years, and I think hopefully there's been some discussions about more on the horizon. But can you talk a little bit about some of the work the legislature has done around audiology, and I would say specifically, most recently, the Audiology Speech Language Pathology Interstate Compact?
Right, so thank you. Yeah, we've had two exciting changes that took place last session. One is that Senate Bill 47 is basically a privilege to practice, and so we were the one of the first 10 states to join that, and so as every state that is a part of that, it gives you the privilege to practice in those states. That will be for telehealth reasons, and then also, you know, just like in Kentucky, for example, where we border Ohio and Indiana and Tennessee and those types of things. So it will hopefully be something to save on the expense of having to have licensure in all these different states. So that's going to be something that's good moving forward, and hopefully more states will join that compact. The other thing that we just did this past summer, speaking as to the roadmap that Stephanie alluded to, for Medicaid, some of you are familiar, and this is something that Angela Morris had worked on for years and years as well. So a child can come to an audiologist under the age of 21, and you can bill Medicaid directly and not have to have a referral. But in order for an adult to get a hearing test, it had to be billed under an ENT. So now a Medicaid adult can come directly to an audiology practice. They do not have to have a referral, and it is, you know, very much the roadmap that we're looking to accomplish with direct access at the Medicare level. So we've accomplished that for Medicaid at the state level.
Yeah, that was a lot of hard work went into that, and we're very lucky that we had some dedicated audiologists at KAA who went and made comments to the Medicaid Advisory Committee, and have such a great advocate in the legislature to help us with that process and understanding where we need to go. Stephanie, kind of pitch back, we talked about access for a little bit, but as you mentioned, last Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives passed H.R. 3, which was a very wide-ranging bill, but it included specifically the reimbursement and practitioner status components of the Medicare Audiologist Access Services Act, but it did leave off direct access in their legislation. Ultimately, while that bill did not pass both houses, it does speak to some of the attention around this issue. Can you talk about the importance of the access piece specifically, and are there other ways that it could be achieved?
Sure. So again, from the standpoint of the beneficiary, access to the audiologist without having to first get that physician order is really kind of fundamental in getting them the help that they need. As you all know, you know, better than I do, it takes people often a very long time to seek help when they suspect that they have a hearing or balance problem. Forcing them through a system that is disjointed leads to a lot of times them being kicked out of the continuum of care at some point in that system. We know that general practitioners, primary care providers, are under a lot of stress and are under a lot of time crunches of their own. There's a shortage of them. They're not, frankly, doing a fantastic job all of the time, and even screening patients and older adults for hearing loss, or even asking the questions that need to be asked in order for them to proactively make those referrals. So to add an additional barrier on the beneficiary for them to have to go back and get that order is really creating a lot of hurdles for the beneficiary, but also it makes the system highly inefficient. There is a duplicative services, you know, to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars that happen because people are having to go two places. Additionally, the beneficiary has substantive extra out-of-pocket costs under Medicare because they're responsible for 20% of the cost for all of these office visits. So when they're having to do unnecessary ones, it makes it tougher for them to stay in that continuum of care as well. So as Adam alluded, while we are working very, very hard to make sure that the direct access component is included with any legislation that moves forward in Congress as it relates to hearing benefits, we believe, and as does Congress, that direct access could actually be done through an administrative regulation through CMS itself. So they could issue a proposed rule. And they could actually change the policy without having to change or update the statute. We have been working to try to get that done as an audiology community for about 25 years. So I'm not holding out a lot of hope that it would happen through anything other than a statutory change. But when H.R. 3 did go through the House last 2019, there's actually a provision at the end of it that was added where Congress specifically told the Secretary of Health and Human Services that he or she did have the authority in their view, and because of that, they wanted to include a mandated report on evaluating what the effectiveness of direct access might look like. And it was sort of Congress's way of saying, hey, Mr. Secretary, please take a look at this. Unfortunately, we just don't want to rely on anything administrative to be done, partly because it hasn't, and partly because if they can change it one way, they can change it the other way pretty easily. So we would rather see it done in statute, and that's what we'll shoot for. But.
Representative Frazier, we know access is not just a big issue at the federal level, but at the state level as well. Can you talk more broadly about access to healthcare services and some of the challenges that Kentucky faces with that, and how important it is for us to kind of start to address those, making it easier for providers to come in and see patients?
So just in general, Kentucky is a very sick state. We have approximately 14% of our population that's diabetic. Over 40% of our population is hypertensive. We have many comorbidities. Obesity is a big issue. And so the experience that I've had in healthcare is influential in the most of those types of legislation comes through the Health and Services Committee, and I serve on that committee. And so just being able to raise that flag and ring that bell, for another lack of word, is important for awareness, and especially as it pertains to audiology, because those things affect our practice as well. And so being able to articulate that to other healthcare providers just helps us raise our standing in the healthcare profession in general.
And Stephanie, we know one problem with access, obviously, is getting providers into communities where they're most needed. And the ADA has recently undertaken a broad survey of state licensure laws across the country. Can you speak kind of briefly about some of the more surprising things you found in that survey? And how does Kentucky rate compare to other states?
Sure, I'll be glad to. So one of the things that we know is that if the Medicare Audiologist Access and Services Act is passed, it is going to be dependent, its effectiveness is going to be dependent on the state laws in each state. So, you know, as I mentioned, one of the provisions is that audiologists would be able to be reimbursed for Medicare-covered services that they're licensed to provide. So we need to make sure that audiologists are licensed to provide all of those services that they've been trained to provide. And in some cases, it's very nebulous at best in some of the states. We're asked a lot of times about evaluation and management codes, and would those be able to be billed by audiologists? And the answer is really, it depends. It depends on whether or not you're recognized to bill for evaluation and management in the state, and whether it's clear. Same with cerumen management. That's another big one that's oftentimes either not addressed in-state in the statute, or in what we want are for the statutes to be broad, but we want them to be clear. And in a lot of cases, they simply aren't. So as we have gone through all of the state licensure laws, and we're still kind of working our way through, we've been trying to focus on the areas where they need to be updated and improved. And that's something that certainly, as we go forward, that Kentucky should take a look at. The licensure statute could be better worded. It is great in that it is fairly broad. But it doesn't really address everything probably that needs to be addressed. So we'd love to be able to update it to include words like diagnose, treat, evaluate, manage. We would like to include audio vestibular. We want to make it very clear that balance and not just hearing is part of the things that are included. So I think that there is some work that we should do in Kentucky in that statute. But I also think that you've got some very good things in the sense that it's fairly broad and not restrictive. So we can build on that and make some improvements there. In terms of how Kentucky rates with other states, I'd say you're about somewhere in the middle. You're actually doing pretty well, and there are some states that are really could look to Kentucky for some improvements. There are some other statutes, Kentucky statutes, that you might want to take a look at as you can. One is the hearing aid dispensing, the requirements for hearing aid dispensing, and just making sure that those are aligned with federal regulations or federal mandates. There are a couple of areas that look like may be vulnerable to preemption by FDA regulation. So I believe Kentucky has a 90-day requirement to have a a medical evaluation 90 days prior, right, or within 90 days. The federal government actually says 6 months. The federal government does not require a hearing aid evaluation on top of that. Even though you have a waiver, and probably most people are using the waiver, and I recognize that, it's just something to keep in mind that if it were ever tested, it probably isn't enforceable at the end of the day, unless it's aligned with the federal. So.
Well, it's good to hear that, you know, I think we're probably all used to the common refrain about where Kentucky is behind some other states, so good to hear we're solidly middle of the pack. I'll take that. I'd like to be at the front, and I think there's a couple ways we can do that. But we have known for some time that Kentucky's laws need some updates, and in fact, frankly, some of the statutes that govern audiology and the dispensing of hearing aids haven't been updated since the 70s, and there are reasons for that, and I think Representative Frazier's in a great position to kind of talk about maybe some of the challenges when it comes to getting the legislature to act and some of the inertia behind leaving these laws in place. What can we do to overcome that?
So I think a lot of it is just that there's so much on the table, and again, because we are only a part-time legislative body, that we're only in session from January to April, and we have so many different things that come before us over many different topics, many different areas, and it kind of just becomes, like you had mentioned, inertia is a good word. It's just what becomes important at that moment, and so if it's not something that's pressing, it can very easily get kind of to the bottom of the barrel where they're, you know, and if there's no reason for it to be changed, then a lot of times it won't be changed. And then, you know, I'm just one person out of 138. So as far as gaining that influence and getting other people to see the importance of it the same that I am, then that just takes time. And so that's why a lot of these things, it's like moving a mountain. It just, you gain a little bit of momentum at a time. But once you get that ball rolling, then you start getting, you know, more co-sponsors and more traction and more impetus behind that. And so that's why, you know, we talk a lot about advocacy, and you feel like, well, I'm doing this, or I'm going, or I'm writing, or I'm giving, and it just sometimes takes a long time to get that traction going, but it's very important just so there's that awareness of the issue, and then over time it becomes bigger and bigger, and then until there's a point that where action finally takes place.
Appreciate that, and certainly I would respect that Representative Frazier's here in her official capacity, so I'm going to direct the next question about politics actually to Stephanie. On the political side of things, it has been said by one of my favorite people that winners make policy and losers go home. While our issues are nonpartisan, we're certainly not talking about any particular party or any ideology. Can you talk a little bit about the ways that audiologists could support legislators who support audiology?
Sure. I think first and foremost, I think, is to go and support them financially, support their campaigns. It does not have to be a large contribution. A lot of times it's more about showing up at a, you know, a fundraising event, or showing up at a town hall and just thanking them for their support of audiology initiatives as they happen, particularly on the when it is bipartisan. You may strongly disagree with you know, a legislator or somebody who's on one side or another of any given issue. But on issues like this, from a policy perspective, there's always a way to find common ground with people. And I did want to just go back to the last question for 1 minute, because I did want to talk about dual licensure. I meant to do that and forgot to. But Kentucky is actually very behind in that particular area. You guys are already aware of that. You're one of only 10 states that still requires a license to dispense hearing aids on top of the audiology license. This is something that could potentially even be problematic as we're looking at the state licensure compacts and true participation in a meaningful way. So the states that still require that, for those audiologists that want the privilege to practice in those states, they also would likely be bound by having to get that extra step to get another license to dispense if that's what they're going to do there. So we don't want that to be a barrier, and it's one of, I think, a great many situations where things take a long time to change sometimes, but I think that you're on the right path and it's going to happen. It seems like there's a lot of momentum around it. So states like California and New Jersey and others who've been facing the same thing have been very successful in recent years in making those changes. Legislatures are less and less likely to want barriers anymore to occupational licensure, so they have been more willing to sort of roll back some of those unnecessary requirements. So hopefully that will work. But knowing that, and knowing that that needs to happen, now is the perfect time for you all to be talking to your legislators in your part of the state. Talk to your state representative, talk to your state senator. Know who these people are. They will take your phone call. They are close enough to you. You probably run into them at church or the grocery store or, you know, at your child's school outings. So they want to know how they can best help their constituents, and they're the closest to you. And they're also the ones that are going to impact your ability to practice the most. Federal legislation is really important, but on a day-to-day basis, what happens at the state level is going to have a bigger impact on your practice. And so it's really important to be involved there. In terms of support, I think, again, you should identify who are on the committees of jurisdiction for the issues that impact you. You should make a point to reach out to them, let them know your concerns, and thank them when they actually, you know, take on the initiative. Because a lot of times these folks get into political jeopardy on the other side as well. As I'm sure you're aware, there are sometimes situations where physicians don't always want change when it comes to updating some of the statutes at the state and federal level. And they are very willing to spend their money and time, you know, to be active on the advocacy side. So you need to be as well. The other thing that I've really found is what legislators care more about even than you are your patients. So if there are opportunities for you to sort of share some of the information with your patients about the things you're working on and how it can benefit them, then they can take that information to their, you know, to the legislators as well, and they oftentimes can have an even greater impact.
Yeah, I think one thing that our Kentucky legislature does really well is that the access to information. So if you don't know who your legislator is, it's very easy to hop on their website. It's just legislature.ky.gov. Click on who's my legislator, punch in your address, and if you're lucky, it'll come up Deanna. If not, no, I'm kidding. There's a lot of fantastic folks up there. And to that point, one common refrain you hear is the phrase, all politics is local. Can you talk about the importance of around building a lasting relationship beyond simply just asking your legislator to do something, but building a relationship with that legislator for being an expert in your field?
Well, and I think it's just how you alluded to, you know, it all goes back to who you know, who you like, and who you trust. And the legislature, especially the House, is the people's house. And so those are the people that you are seeing in the grocery, you're seeing at church, you're seeing at kids' ball games, that type of thing. And those are the people that, you know, the way that I see it, those are the people that I'm accountable to. And so those are the people that are, their opinion is going to mean much more to me than, you know, someone else in another part of the state. And so for you to have that influence in your particular district is very important, because once they know you, then they trust you. And then when you have a need or an ask or a want, you know, you're already going to have that established relationship there. And we do respond, we do listen. And so what you have to say is very important to them.
Yeah, to that local angle, I won't pick on anybody in particular, but I know we have had issues in the past where, for example, we've really wanted to engage a particular legislator, but not had great representation in their district, for example. Can you talk a little bit about how your office handles communications from constituents and then some of the communications you get, maybe even statewide?
Right. So each legislator has approximately 40,000 people that's in their district, and we're getting ready to go through a redistricting. So, and Kentucky's population has grown close to 10%, so those things are going to change a little bit. But so not only in my particular district, there's also issues that are seem to be either urban or rural, so they're going to have more influence one way or the other, you know, whether you know, it's a Lexington, Louisville matter, or whether it's something that just pertains to Eastern Kentucky. And so sometimes it's a conglomeration of people that have that same type of lifestyle. But you know, the people that are in my district, a lot of times I'm voting on what is important to them. And as you alluded to, sometimes it's a matter that is a statewide issue. And so I'm voting basically on the state rather than just my district. But again, it all goes back to having that personal relationship.
Yeah, and, you know, and to that point, I'd say for folks that aren't aware, the single licensure bill, it has been introduced in Kentucky for a couple sessions now. That is actually Pam Eisenglover's state representative personally. So to give you an idea of what that impact looks like, to affect real change, those personal relationships mean as much as anything, as much as anything we can do. So while obviously those relationships matter, Stephanie, can you talk about how, for example, like organizations like ADA and KAA can leverage the power of the group to help convince policymakers to make changes?
Sure. So while I'm here on behalf of ADA, I'm going to tell you that it is far more important for you to be a member of KAA than it is ADA, okay? And I'm probably preaching to the choir because you're all here, but from the standpoint of practice, KAA has so much more leverage and so much more of a voice here in Kentucky on the issues that matter most to you. If you have not done so already, you really should give to your PAC. You really should give to that state PAC. It takes a lot of people, and it takes a lot of money sometimes to affect change. And that's just the way politics is. It's not perfect, but it is fairly consistent. And I think as part of all of our professional responsibility, we have an obligation to advocate for the profession. And one of the ways that that has to happen is by volunteering your time and volunteering your talent and giving some of your treasure towards that goal. I think the great thing about giving to a PAC, particularly, this is just my opinion, is that the board and the leaders will do the donating in a nonpartisan way. And if you're not comfortable donating directly to candidates, it's a great way for you to help your organization make the contributions when they need to happen. And it really can provide a lot of leverage. It's not that donations to candidates are buying votes, but they are, on some level, getting a better seat at the table to make the case for the change that needs to be made. Okay, and that's just the way that politics works.
You know, and to Stephanie's point about the leadership, I would say good leaders of PACs don't look for opportunities to, you know, affect a legislator's decision. They look for legislators who are naturally inclined to support an organization such as KAA and make sure that those folks are getting the support they need. As you're on your third cycle now, Representative Frazier can attest to how hard it is to run a campaign.
And Adam, I just wanted to add that, you know, I think it's important for you to know how active that KAA is at the state. You know, you have receptions in the evening where legislators have come over to learn more about our profession and what we do. They have brought groups into the Capitol to do hearing screenings for legislators. They're bringing student groups in that are doing some things too. And, you know, and even some of our related organizations like Kentucky Hands and Voices. Sarah Roof has been very active in, we're going to have a bill this session for screening for CMV. There's things that are happening or people are beginning to notice what audiology is and what we do. Their past two sessions, there's also been a school stipend bill for audiologists and speech pathologists to raise that stipend. So, I mean, there's many different things on many different levels that are taking place. And as you had mentioned earlier as well, just for example, that Medicaid change, that did not require a bill. That was what's called an administrative regulations change. And so we were able to do that while we were not in session. But again, make those policy changes that will essentially go into effect the same way that that a statute would.
You know, and I hate to say I may have got a little ahead of myself because I didn't want to scare anybody about saying campaigns are hard. But I think I've been on the ground helping folks, and I've seen the hard work that they put in, so I don't want to short sell it. But, you know, as one of only two state-elected audiologists in the country, you have a unique experience in serving in both fields. For someone who's maybe interested in getting involved or even running for office, what are some of the things you wish someone had told you ahead of time?
Well, there's a phrase that we say a lot. It's like drinking from a fire hose because, you know, we know what we know in our world of what we do, but then especially at the state level in this world, you know, I'm making decisions on catalytic converters, car insurance, taxes, grooming. I mean, it's just across the board. And so as far as just having that wide knowledge base, it's quite a task of just keeping up. But in general, just knowing what you, it's not about me, it's about the people. And so being able to connect with people, to build those relationships, and to be an effective, not just for myself, but to have influence on other people, because not one person is going to be able to make any kind of change. We have to have the majority, and whether that's the majority in a committee, a majority in the Senate or the House, it's being able to have that influence and being influential in your community as well as at other levels.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of great opportunities, even if you're not looking to seek elected office, but for example, boards and commissions that have a lot of influence. We spoke a little bit about the Medicare regulation, but that was administratively done, which means it wasn't reviewed really by any elected official until it makes its way to a special subcommittee. So just know that if they're looking for opportunities like that, certainly contact KAA. We'd love to provide you the advice and support you need. With that, I want to take the opportunity to open it up to questions. I know this is a group that's very interested in policy. So what are some things that have come up maybe we didn't address in the talk that you all are interested in hearing about? Well, I see some side discussions, so I want to let you guys finish those. Don't worry, we'll have plenty of time to get to that. With that, I want to be mindful of your all's time, and we'll go in reverse order, actually. And Stephanie, if you want to give any closing remarks.
Sure. There are a couple of other things going on that might be of interest. You probably saw that President Biden, July 9th, issued an executive order sort of telling the FDA to speed things up and move along on getting the over-the-counter hearing aid regulations out, the proposed regulations. So we're expecting those to be released sometime in October. We anticipate that there will probably be then another 60 to 90 day comment period, depending on how much they want to speed things along. And then the agency will have a certain additional amount of time to send out the final rule. So That is going to be coming, so one thing to keep in mind. And again, I think looking at this whole Medicare coverage of hearing aids is something that we've got a very, very closely contested Congress all the way around this time. You've got it's just a very slight edge to the Democrats by virtue of someone who can break a tie. That said, it does sound like there may be some real opportunities for a coverage package that is going to include dental, vision, and hearing. And in that respect, the devil's really in the details, because We want to make sure that it's not legislated in a way that leaves too much up to the secretary. It never turns out well for anyone when too much is left up to the agency. So ADA, AAA, ASHA are all working very closely together to make sure that not only is MASA included in that, any package that happens, but also that the provisions for the hearing aid coverage themselves are those that are going to be a true meaningful benefit to the beneficiary, but also going to allow providers to be able to deliver those services in a way that is sustainable for their practices, because it's really, really important that you all are able to make the living that you need to make in order for those patients to be helped over the long run. And I think that sometimes that gets left behind and forgotten. So I will be glad to answer any questions that I can about anything that's going on at the federal level or anything else that I could be helpful with here in Kentucky. So anytime, not just today, but going forward. If you are interested in thanking a federal legislator, Senator Paul is going to be at the ADA offices next week on Thursday, August 26th. He's going to come over for some coffee, hang out a little while. If you're interested in coming out to thank him, please let me know, and I'll book you in. He'd love to hear from audiologists. I know he's very, very passionate about MASA, not only from a cost-saving standpoint for those who know him, but also, frankly, a competition standpoint. He thinks it's really important that patients have their choice of provider. So, yeah.
Representative Frazier.
I'll just speak to the licensure issue, because I know that's been something that's been a goal for a very long time. And so we have had a couple of hearings about that. As far as the exact direction that we're going to go, it's not exactly sure. We had first looked at being exempt from having that license altogether. More recently, there's been some discussion about merging the instrument board and the audiology board, because even we have a lot of buy-in, and we have gained a lot of momentum, but you have to understand the hearing instrument specialists also have lobbyists that are doing the same thing on the other side, and so it's essentially, you know, two people are talking, and but we have had hearings. I feel like there will be a bill coming forward this session, and so hopefully we'll be able to get that done this year, but that's just a another benefit of having an audiologist that's there, so I can answer questions. I'm there in the trenches, and so hopefully I will be working very hard to get that accomplished this session.
There are some days that it's really more like a trench than it is like an office. I've definitely seen. Now, I can say my spidey sense is tingling, or perhaps it's just my tinnitus acting up again, but I think we did have one comment / question.
Yeah, I really quickly wanted to, from like a practitioner standpoint, really give her all how important your all's involvement is with what we're trying to do. And it's not necessarily being a member on the board, although we do need people who will volunteer to be on the board as far as being able to run those positions. But even donating $5 to our PAC, because if we can go back to our legislators and say, we have 100% support from the audiologists. That's that really drives home a message that we're trying to send. But also sharing Pancake's Facebook posts for your colleagues that you know maybe are not members of KAA, encouraging them to be members, encouraging them to get involved, taking the time to send an email to your legislators or sending a phone call. The email really takes less than 2 minutes. There are templates available on EA's website, support NASA, KAA's website. It takes no time, and when they see that message over and over and over, it drives the message home. And they want to hear from people in their districts. So I've advocated with ADA multiple times. I've spoken probably to your legislators that are in your districts, and that's awesome. Obviously, I live in Kentucky. I can speak about the Kentucky population. but they want to hear from you and how this specifically impacts people that live in their district. So I cannot stress enough how much we want your support in any way possible, whether that's time, financial, volunteering for the board, or anything. Don't get afraid when you talk to board members about how much the time commitment is, other ways that you can get involved.
And I would just like to add, if any of you have difficulty finding your legislator or you don't know who your legislator is, once you know that name or whose district that you're in, you know, feel free to reach out to me and I can help make that connection. You know, I can say, this is someone that I work with. This is someone that I respect. I really wish you would, you know, listen to them. So I'm more than happy to help that process along because it is very important for the whole profession.
Yeah, there's a ton of great ways to get involved with those people. Obviously, Representative Frazier knows a lot of them. Find him on social media. If you're Stephanie and you live in Senator Damon Thayer's district, he is always on Twitter, so it's probably faster to get him there than it is anywhere else. Sorry, another question?
No, it's not a question. It's a comment. I'm the past chairman of the License Board of Hearings and Specialists and past chairman of the Radio Association. I'm the only audiologist. Advantage of the hearing aid these measures have had over the years is the fact that the audiologist is a group that not been as a group, always been splintered groups that fought among each other or when they won and they didn't. So the other way to put it to work is that the audiologist as a group get together as a people block. I'll tell you what we did to do that. We can take the work out. We had my district meeting at the American Conference, just the Hearing Aid Association of Kentucky. We got all about $5,000-$6,000 worth of donations for work. And when he talks in this industry, I go out to ask various of the legislators to go to a little group of things that they can add. So, like you said, you don't have to give a special money to you look money. They remember you. And as a business, as a group, as a solid money
Thank you, Peter, for saying that. Peter was chairman of the board when I was on the board prior to serving in the legislature, so it's a very good point. Thank you.
Dr. Spohr.
Can your funds come from your business in the state of Kentucky?
That is a fantastic question that I always begin with. I am not an attorney, but the question was, can PAC funds come from your corporate accounts?
No.
I am not an attorney, but I can tell you under Kentucky state law, contributions to PACs are for political uses, and they cannot come from corporate funds. They do have to come from individual funds. That is one of the bits of transparency I think Kentucky does really well, and that there are no corporate contributions. It is simply individuals pooling their resources together to advocate for a particular cause or issue. And ultimately, I can tell you, a lot of folks think it goes to some nefarious purpose. It really goes to buying pizza for interns a lot of the time, helping people knocking doors with bottles of water. It's definitely something worthwhile doing, and I know plenty of folks can speak more to that than I can. With that, I want to be mindful of everybody's time and give you a little bit more time with the exhibitors. So thank you, everyone. Thank you to both of our speakers for joining us. Our next session is at 11 a.m., so please feel free to take a little bit of a break, and we'll see you back in here about 20 minutes.